Welcome to the Recruiting Rant Podcast. I'm your host, Gerard Martinez, senior analyst for USCFootball.com. We record this podcast during Memorial Day, which we honor our fallen veterans and give our appreciation to those still serving in the military today. The big news this Memorial Day weekend is the crystal ball selection of tight end Lake McCree to USC. Lake McCree is a three-star tight end out of Austin, Texas, Lake Travis High School. He's rated the number 26 tight end in the nation by 24/7 Sports. We expect USC to only take one tight end in the 2021 class, and we discussed tight end Terrence Ferguson in last week's podcast. Ironically, Ferguson just recently put out a top five, which included USC, but if McCree does commit to USC, we expect USC to shut things down on the tight end front. McCree actually made it out to the Trojans Elite Camp last June, so unlike the Trojans' other two Texas commits, Brandon Campbell and Quay Davis, McCree has actually seen USC in person, which is probably one of the main reasons he feels comfortable with USC and is willing to commit to them over Auburn, LSU, Penn State, Purdue, and several other schools. We'll have more on McCree's recruitment in the war room this week, and I'm sure we'll probably have a few questions about McCree and USC recruiting tight ends in next week's Recruiting Rant Podcast. But we've got another 2 pages of questions to get to in this Recruiting Rant Podcast. I got to cut those threads off at 2 pages because more than 40 questions usually takes more than an hour. So let's get to this week's Recruiting Rant Podcast questions. And our first question comes from Peasy, who asked, I'd just like to hear you talk a little bit about the new defensive rankings that came out and how with no off-season workouts or 7-on-7 circuit, there was so much movement. Thanks, Primo. From Rafael Martinez. The only explanation I can give for West Coast prospects moving down in the latest 24/7 rankings update is that there were other recruits from other regions that moved up. Perhaps those recruits didn't have a full season of junior film up on Huddle. Perhaps those recruits just didn't get a full evaluation from the rankings committee as a whole. I'm not here to defend any specific moves from the rankings committee because I'm not a part of the rankings committee. I can only point to an example like Nathaniel Wiggins, the 6'1", 175-pound cornerback from Atlanta Westlake High School, who at one time was a 3-star prospect. You could put on his film immediately, and I think even as a layman, know right away that he was better than a 3-star prospect. Nylon Green, same thing. 6'3", 185-pound cornerback out of Georgia, another Georgia defensive back. He originally was a 3-star prospect and was a guy that you could put on the film and within the first minute know this kid at his height with his speed is definitely better than a 3-star prospect. So regionally, those analysts may have felt that as well. They may have felt that he was underrated. But you have to get the entire rankings committee. That means the guys on the West Coast, the guys on the East Coast, the guys in the Midwest, the guys in the South, all on the same page so they can review that film and they can come to some type of an agreement together about where that player should be ranked. And then once you feel confident about where that player should be ranked, you have to sort out where the other players around that player are ranked. Who moves down, who stays the same. So it's a complicated situation, and I know it's a complicated answer, but that's the answer and the explanation that makes the most sense to me. If you want my thoughts on any specific player rankings on the West Coast or in general, just follow up on the Peristyle and we'll have that discussion there. Our next question comes from Gip, and he asked, for D-line, we currently have Jay Toya and Colin Mobley and looking to sign Corey Foreman, JT Tuimoloau, and Aaron Armitage, all three of whom we take if they wanted to sign. I hear we could also be signing Tia Sevilla as a D-lineman. If all four wanted to sign, are we really looking at 6 D-linemen in this class, or could this mean Toya and Mobley would decommit? Okay, that was a mouthful, Gip. No, I don't think USC is going to sign 6 defensive linemen in the 2021 class. I think you're really looking more at 4, possibly 5, depending on who that 5th player would be. In terms of Sevilla and his place in the class, I think the jury's still out. I think the fact that now you have Mobley in the mix, You could have Armitage in the mix. And I talked about this last week. For me, Aaron Armitage is very similar to Tia Sevilla in terms of frame, in terms of how he plays and how he might fit into USC's defensive scheme. So while Tia Sevilla was a guy that was high on the board maybe 2-3 months ago, now you have Armitage looking like he wants to be a part of the class. That could change up the recruiting board a little bit. So I think it's just a matter of wait and see. I don't see Mobley already decommitting. And Jay Toya has been a part of the class for a long time. And Jay Toya, when you're looking at that group, is a very unique player to that group because he's more of a one-shade nose guard where those other players are defensive ends. The next question comes from Matt Davidson. He asks, what is the likelihood that Will Latu ends up signing in this class? Will Latu, the 6'2", 220-pound, four-star athlete from Bethel High School in Spanaway, Washington. I don't see USC recruiting Will Latu heavily at this point. Not when you have Julian Simon, the 6'2", 225-pound linebacker, committed. You have Ma'ag Yotiote already committed. You have four-star Ethan Calvert out of Oaks Christian still on the table. And you have four-star linebacker from modern day Rayshon Davis still on the table. So you really have a lot of options at linebacker. I know Latu can play running back as well, but that's really his second position. So I don't see USC taking Will Latu. I don't think right now they're going to be recruiting him heavily. Our next question comes from Big Jim Trojan. He says, Gerard, thanks for entertaining my question last week on Malik Brown, modern day, and Oregon. You're welcome. Four semi-quick, maybe not quick questions for you. Maybe not quick questions? Jim, listen, Ryan Abraham just turned off the podcast. Ryan Abraham does not allow not quick questions. I actually wonder if Ryan listens to the Recruiting Rant podcast. Ryan, if you're out there and you're listening to the podcast, please post on the Peristyle. Big Jim, rapid fire questions only. Now, looking at Jim's questions, they're not even short to read. So we're going to have to go through these one at a time. Question number one, Troy Franklin. Have you heard anything new or different regarding his recruitment? The Oregon board slash fans are very confident they'll get him and Thornton. And I would have to double my daily dosage of beverages to deal with the disappointment. I hate losing top talent in state, especially to out-of-state programs. Well, I'm sorry, Big Jim. Troy Franklin puts out his final four Tuesday, and it does not include USC. Surprisingly, but it looks like USC is going to be out of it, at least for the time being, for Troy Franklin. The second question is Kingsley Suomataia. Do we have a 50-50 shot at him? Or is that too optimistic at this point, considering he's been working out with fellow Utah native and potential number one draft pick Penei Sewell this summer? I really like what I've seen from him in terms of his athleticism, his size, and his drive to develop his skill set to be a starting caliber left tackle. Besides getting Miller Moss and Corey Foreman, Kingsley would be third on my wish list. Right now, I think 50-50 is too optimistic. I think it's probably more 60-40 USC-Oregon, Oregon being 60% chance of landing his commitment before the end of the summer, USC probably in that 40% range. The third question is, Stephen Carr, do we have a back we're recruiting that is in the mold of a healthy Stephen Carr? I'm just going to cut that question short and say no. I do not see a Fontana Summit five-star Stephen Carr available for USC in this class. I do like Byron Cardwell, the 6'1", 195-pound running back from San Diego Morse High School. His style of running reminds me a little bit of Joe Mixon. He has a bit of an upright running style, gets to the line of scrimmage, has good lateral feet, has pretty good breakaway speed in the open field at 6'+". Joe Mixon was a little faster, and Joe Mixon was a little bigger. And Joe Mixon's a guy playing in the NFL right now. So that's a pretty good comparison, but the reality of it, Stephen Carr, senior year, even freshman year at USC looked really, really special. And I agree, he has seemed to have lost a step after the back injury. So we'll see if he's able to regain that. I think partly some of his, not necessarily regression, but some of his stunted development has to do with the lack of a true running back coach when he was kind of transitioning off of that injury. He had a guy like Dylan McCullough, who was a fantastic running back coach, coaching now for the Kansas City Chiefs, and a guy that I think was a great mentor on and off the field for running backs. He understood the game not only from a physical standpoint, but from a psychological standpoint. And only recently, Mike Jenks now comes into the mix, and he didn't have a healthy Stephen Carr, Vi Melapai, or Marquis Stepp in his first year. Plus, he's in an offensive scheme that will go to the pass if the run game is not there. So he's really got to pound the table to make sure that the offense is balanced this year. And the only way that's going to happen is if he's got a healthy stable of running backs. The final question, and I think Big Jim, we might be pushing it here, but we're going to go for number four. He says, weakest link, who do you think is the position coach that can improve his recruiting tactics / efforts the most at this point? Tim Drevno has been the hot name around these parts these days to point and complain about. I'm willing to consider that he may have some burdens to overcome in recruiting offensive linemen, but I'm concerned with how many top offensive prospects Oregon has drawn opposed to us. I think USC has to land another top running back prospect. So that falls on Mike Jenks. I'm not of the opinion that because this is a semi-air raid offense that USC doesn't need to recruit 4-star and 5-star running backs. I understand that last year, in terms of running back production, you didn't really have a 1,000-yard rusher. You really weren't able to ride any one running back to be able to sell that in recruiting. But this is USC. This is tailback U. There's a ton of tradition there, and that is easy to sell on the recruiting trail. So you're going to lose a 4-star in Vi Melapai. You're going to lose a former 5-star in Stephen Carr. You've got a 3-star in Brandon Campbell committed right now. You need to get at least another 4-star running back for next year. Our next question comes from Cassius. He asks, any player comps for Troy Franklin? I'm still astounded that my high school alma mater has a 4-star/5-star kid coming out. Unreal. While you're at it, any updates on his recruitment? You rock, GM. You rock real good. I appreciate that, Cassius. I would say that although the comparison within his 24/7 profile is to Marquise Lee, I actually hearken to another receiver, and maybe it's the NorCal thing, maybe it's the number one, but I see more Marvin Jones in him, the former 4-star receiver from Etiwanda High School, went to Cal. I see a bit more polish with Troy Franklin. I see a bit more football IQ and awareness with Troy Franklin than I saw with Marquise Lee coming out of high school. Marquise Lee was a tremendous athlete, but he was raw. I mean, he was an athlete's athlete. He didn't always understand or know what he was doing on the football field. It was literally let the whistle blow and run. And with Troy Franklin, I don't see that. I see definitely a more polished receiver. I see a receiver with above average athleticism, certainly not playing against the toughest competition in California. He's not seeing the modern days, Boscos, Centennials, etc. of California. So that's a little bit of a question in terms of time speed and what we're seeing in terms of him running away from players, if that's going to translate on the next level. As for his recruitment, Franklin put out a Final Four Tuesday that included ASU, Oregon, Alabama, and Washington. So as of right now, USC is on the outside looking in of his recruitment. Our next question comes from Sharmack. He asks, recruiting is certainly hot for the Trojans now. So when is the next commit? You've mentioned in the past that if Miller Moss, quarterback from Alameda, is in, Garcia is out. Jake Garcia from La Habra High School. So who's the other quarterback that you think is a third option if this scenario plays out? Thanks, GM. Looking forward to the next one. Ironically, and I'm going to give you a little scoop here, the next commitment for USC was actually supposed to be Tuesday, May 26th. Now, talking to a few sources this past weekend, it sounds like that announcement is probably going to be pushed back. I am not 100% sure if it's going to be pushed back for later this week, or perhaps it's going to be pushed back to next week. But the next commitment for USC was actually supposed to be Tuesday. As for the question about quarterback options, we talked about this last week. Right now, USC's third option would have to be a quarterback committed to another school. And being that those quarterbacks are committed to other schools, that's another discussion for another time. The next question is from Tejas Pacific, who asks, Sear Wright seems to be perfect for USC. He's perfect, GM. He's perfect. Why hasn't he committed yet? Loyola High School, actor, good size, speed. Does SC prefer him or Nathaniel Wiggins at corner? Could we get both if the modern-day corner leaves the state? I think the answer to that question is more, if USC gets both, they're not going to recruit Jalen Davies, who is the cornerback for modern day. And there is a possibility that they get both. Who do they like more? You know, I think they're both probably rated pretty high on USC's board. They're both really good players. There's some similarities with both. Obviously, if you get Sear Wright, you're probably taking him away from a school that you're going to have to play against. Whereas with Nathaniel Wiggins, he's most likely going to end up in the SEC. If he doesn't go to USC, there is some potential that he goes to Oregon as well. But you're probably taking him away from a school that you're not going to have to face in the next couple years. Whereas Sear Wright is either going to stay on the West Coast or he's probably going to go to Notre Dame. So there is an advantage, and we talked about this last week, and we've mentioned this many times before. When you lock down the West and you lock down California, you starve schools of the talent it takes to beat you. Matt Davison comes in with another question. He asks, any news on Rayshon Davis? Rayshon Davis being the four-star linebacker from modern day. No news on Rayshon Davis. Our next question comes from Gate Call. He asks, with the new defensive staff, are you noticing any positional prototypes they prefer that are different than the previous staffs? In the same vein, are they more likely to grab a talent irrespective of fitting the prototype and then finding a way to best use them? The only real difference that I've seen is maybe in the defensive backfield. It's interesting because the previous staff began recruiting really tall corners. Every corner that they offered a scholarship to was at least 6'1". And then that suddenly changed one year. And they offered Max Williams and Max Williams commit. And that was very much a pivot away from the prototypical corners that they were recruiting. On the flip side, you look at the safeties that Ronnie Bradford and Clancy Pendergast recruited, and a lot of them were in that 6 foot, 6 foot one range. Dorian Hewitt, Chase Williams, Britton Allen, they weren't very big safeties. And now you're starting to see this staff look, yeah, they like length at corner. I think that's just a staple across the board. Every team that's recruiting the cornerback position would love to get a guy 6'1", 6'2", because of the size of the receivers these days. But at safety, you're seeing them kind of go back to what Pete Carroll liked, where you would get bigger safeties. Now, schematically, you're going to want that star safety to be a bigger safety. You're going to want to have a guy that's at least 6'1", 6'2", and can put on 220 pounds. You've got to have him play near the line of scrimmage. He's got to be a great open field tackler, and that means he's got to be pretty strong because you never know what's going to come out of the offensive backfield. It could be a running back that's 225 pounds. It could be a lead blocker. It could be an H-back like a tight end, a guard. You got to have a guy that's going to be able to battle, and the only ways you can do that is some physicality. So that position, you're going to see some size, but I think in general, you're seeing a little more from a prototype standpoint at safety, length, and height. The next question comes from CU007611, who asks, how is the current coach's relationship with former SC linebacker Winner Circle Athletics, former SC linebacker Jordan Campbell? They are hosting a virtual evaluation camp on the 6th, and it seems like they have a great relationship with top local SoCal recruits. Lately, it seems their student athletes are Oregon leans. I can't really speak to the relationship present day. It is a brand new defensive coaching staff, and they have not been able to be on the road for May evaluations. So it's hard to say. Jordan Campbell, former USC linebacker slash fullback, he's a very good promoter. I'm sure he'll have his guys down at USC whenever he can. I saw the picture that was posted on the Peristyle. And, you know, when it comes to training outfits, these kids jump around a lot. I mean, they jump around somewhat with 7-on-7 teams these days. And so, you know, it's kind of hard to say, okay, Damani Jackson. Damani Jackson, I've always known as being a ground zero kid. He's been working with Anthony Brown and ground zero since he was at Mater Dei. So, you know, do you have to have the relationship with Winter Circle? Do you have to have the relationship with ground zero? Well, you want to have a good relationship with all of them. They're all local outfits that the USC coaching staff has to have communication with. And I think this is where the support staff comes in. This is where you have to have people that are in the loop and know people and can network and connect. So you always have an ear within whatever circle it is, whether it's the Winter Circle, whether it's Ground Zero Circle, Premium Sports, Pro A, etc. Nonvet slides in with our next question. He asks, are Rasuli at MD and Male from Utah, both OL, in our gun sight? I love your minigun. Rapid deal process. Nonvet is referring to Ross Masuli out of Mater Dei, the 6'3", 335-pound guard, and George Male, who is a 6'3", 270-pound guard from Utah in the 2022 class. Male is very much in the crosshairs of USC. He's actually predicted right now by Blair Angulo, who is the Mountain West regional analyst for 24/7, to go to USC. So Male is definitely on the target list for the 2022 class as a sophomore. Masuli, not so much. I think with USC, you're only looking at 4, maybe 5 offensive linemen. That 5th offensive lineman would have to be a big-time offensive tackle, someone like Kingsley Suomatia, someone like Tristan Lee. If things fell through with, let's say, Josh Simmons, who's a 6'5", 330-pound guard from La Mesa, San Diego Helix High School, perhaps they go after Masuli. But I think right now the plan A is really Josh Simmons probably being the only other interior offensive lineman that USC is recruiting, and then trying to get more offensive tackles. Because really, tackles are what you want to go for. And if that offensive tackle doesn't work out, there's always potential to move him inside the guard. But it's much harder to have an offensive guard in high school bump out and play offensive tackle. The next question comes from Uncle Rico, Bammer4SC. He asked, GM, first want to say thank you for allowing us to be a part of the podcast. You're very welcome. First question, are there any commitments that surprised you that they actually committed? Second question, which committed player absolutely needs a red shirt to get bigger and mature? Third question, what's your favorite Led Zeppelin song? Mine is The Wanton Song, Great Gym Song. The Wanton Song is actually a great pick because that's an off-the-radar Led Zeppelin song, and it's hard to get off the radar with Led Zeppelin. They have so many popular songs. They have so many good songs. Their catalog is so diverse. I think that's why, debatably, they're maybe the greatest band of all time. So when you're talking about favorite song, it's a tough call. But I do have a favorite song from Led Zeppelin, and it's probably not the song you guys would think it is. You're probably thinking Stairway to Heaven because I play the guitar. And I love Stairway to Heaven. That's an amazing song. But it's actually When the Levee Breaks. I played drums before I started playing guitar. And that song, the way the drums were recorded, the bass drum, just the entire unique sound of that song is so epic. And it's really not matched by any other songs in that era, really any other songs after, in terms of its uniqueness. That song doesn't even sound really like any other Led Zeppelin songs. So it really stands out to me. It's a heavy song. For that era, it's a very heavy song. I would compare it maybe to All Along the Watchtower by Jimi Hendrix. That's a cover of Bob Dylan's All Along the Watchtower, but it's so epic that Bob Dylan actually said that he liked Jimi Hendrix's version better. So what does that tell you? But back to football. The only commitment in this class that was somewhat surprising was probably Julian Simon. Now, we predicted that he was going to commit to USC weeks before he announced, but initially hearing that USC was not only one of his top schools, but probably his lead school, was a bit surprising to me. In terms of redshirts for the class of 2021, I see a bunch of them. I think there's a lot of kids in this class that could do for a redshirt. The offensive line, Mason Murphy, Maximus Gibbs for sure, probably going to need a redshirt. Saia Mapakaitolo, is probably going to need a redshirt. Offensive linemen tend to need redshirts. Defensive linemen less so, but you could see Colin Mobley definitely redshirt, and certainly Jake Garcia can use a redshirt and probably will redshirt because you're still going to have Keaton Slovis there. So, yeah, there's plenty of potential redshirts there. Injuries also come into play when you're talking about redshirts. Keenan Christian is a good example of a player that as a freshman was going to redshirt until there were so many injuries at the running back position, he had to burn his redshirt. And this is going to be a big class. So, you know, if you get 26, 27 recruits in the 2021 class, there's obviously going to be a few guys who are going to redshirt. The next question is from Chris Nicholas Trevino. He asked, Gerard, aliens attack the Earth, and the only way we can stop them is through a winner-take-all 7-on-7 match. Build me your ultimate 7-on-7 team from guys you've seen over your career. They can be guys that didn't play in the 7-on-7 era. Chris, we're almost half an hour into this podcast, and I'm only halfway down the first page of questions, and you want me to put together a 7-on-7 team? Okay, so this is a question that I had to stop and think about, and I don't want to go back through the annals of football to try to put together a 7-on-7 team. Chris, you didn't even give me a scouting report on what these aliens look like. I mean, are they short, fast little aliens? Are they giant aliens? Are they tall? Are they lanky? All of those things can impact how I would put together this team. But I'm just going for the best players that I actually watched during 7-on-7 or in a camp setting of 7-on-7. So I would go with cornerback Patrick Johnson, a.k.a. Patrick Peterson, who played for LSU and later the Cardinals. Cornerback Jalen Ramsey, who was committed to USC at one time and is now in the NFL with the Los Angeles Rams. Cornerback, I put Adoree Jackson there. We all know Adoree. He could play both ways, so he's a nice player that we could throw in the slot on offense as well. I'd put at safety, Sue Cravens, and Juju Smith. So Juju Smith, another player, could play both ways, could be a very good receiver, but I'd also put him in a safety. My linebackers on defense would be Mace Funa and Vontez Burfict. Burfict is a little pre-7-on-7 circuit, but we did see him at the Nike camp and at USC camps, and he was tremendous. For a guy that big, he was one of the best cover linebackers that I've ever seen with shirts and shorts on. Narbonne linebacker Raymond Scott is another player that I thought about at the linebacker position for that team because he was another guy that was a tremendous coverage linebacker in high school. On offense, I have Robert Woods at receiver. I have Amon-Ra St. Brown at receiver. I have Kyle Ford at receiver, mainly because of that opening performance that he had in Texas a couple summers ago. I have Broom Coy also at receiver. I have tight end O.J. Howard, who was a man-child at the opening a few years ago, and a guy that on 7-on-7 was pretty much unstoppable. At quarterback, I'm actually going to go with JT Daniels. Off the top of my head, I can't really remember a more prolific quarterback in the 7-on-7 circuit than JT Daniels. He was tremendous, and obviously, when you're talking about 7-on-7, you can't really run the ball, so you want a pocket quarterback, and he's been one of the best pocket quarterbacks to come out of the high school ranks in a long time. The biggest surprise of the team is probably going to be the running back. I'd actually go with Dominic Davis. Battle at the Beach, Dominic Davis playing for Alemany High School against, I believe, Valencia High School, and he takes a simple flare route and runs it 40 yards untouched for a touchdown. That's a very rare thing to see in 7-on-7. You've got a short 40-yard field. You've got seven defenders there, and you're able to negotiate through that traffic untouched and use your speed to get a touchdown. Hey, I'm putting on my 7-on-7 team. Our next question comes from Best Coast Football, who asks about running back targets, which we've already covered. The second question, though, is also, do you think there are any JUCO targets USC could be looking to sign? Recently, it seems like we've signed at least one. Thanks, GM. I haven't heard much about USC targeting junior college players the past couple recruiting cycles. I think one thing that really hurts junior college players is the transfer portal. Normally, you would go after a JUCO player because you wanted to get instant maturity. You wanted the physicality of someone who has been out of high school for 2 years. Now you can go in the transfer portal And because there's been so many waivers, and potentially next year, there could be an immediate eligibility waiver. So for USC to go into the junior college ranks in the future, when a lot of those players have a difficult time qualifying, I think that's going to be something that you're not going to see much of in the future. USC could potentially go into the transfer portal, get a player that not only has the maturity and physicality to play right away, but also the transcripts. Our next question comes from Golf Zero Hack, or Golfo Hack. He says, "Hi Gerard, happy Memorial Day, and thanks for all those who served and sacrificed. These weekly rants are terrific. Appreciate you putting these together. A few quick questions. Number one, with the NCAA putting immediate eligibility on hold for the 2020 season, what percentage do you think JT Daniels returns?" I'm just going to go with a complete guess at this point and say 55, 65%, something like that. I think the immediate eligibility waiver was a big factor in him deciding to go into the portal. He really wanted to prepare for that potential more than anything, speaking to team sources. And that's why he evidently went into it. It wasn't necessarily one of these things where he was disgruntled, but he wanted to make sure that if that was going to happen, that he was in a position that he could pick a school immediately. And he didn't want to have to sort of, at the last minute, try to scramble because he could go to a school like Georgia or LSU and be able to play right away. And he had been thinking this whole time mentally that he'd been preparing to compete for a job at USC. The second question is, of the two offensive tackle grad transfers we seem to be in the mix for, do you think either they, or parentheses, anyone on the current roster, is able to fill the holes at left tackle and right tackle for us to be a championship caliber team? I'll just be honest, I don't think USC is a national championship caliber team. I don't think it matters if you bring in a grad transfer like Jared Williams or Brandon Council. I don't think that moving Elijah Vera Tucker to left tackle makes them a national championship caliber team. I don't think any school in the Pac-12 is really a national caliber championship team. I think there's a big gap right now. USC is definitely the school that can close that gap, but I still have my questions. I have my questions about the offensive line. I have my questions about the run game. I have my questions about the offensive scheme in general. When you're talking about national championship caliber, you're talking about going against those SEC teams and those Big Ten teams that can run the ball and stop the run. Oklahoma has been the only team that's had any amount of long-term success running a similar type offense and getting to the college football playoff. Once they get to the college football playoff, they've been annihilated a few times. And so, again, my question, when you're going to that level, I mean, we're not talking about Pac-12 championship level. We're talking about national championship level. I don't know if that offense is the offense that you can run and win those big games. I think it's an offense that can win the Pac-12. I think it's an offense that can get into the top 10 nationally. But when it comes to the college football playoff and playing the big boys, you got to run the ball. You got to stop the run. You got to tackle in the open field. And you've got to have the athletes to be able to compete with those schools in the South. Our next question comes from P. Polly, who asks, with Franklin / Thornton looking less likely to find their way to Figueroa in 32nd, and Davis a bit flaky, where do we go for wide receivers? MJ? I believe that's a reference to Michael Jackson. Seems something is wrong at wide receiver recruiting. Or am I reading something that doesn't exist into my question? USC will take three receivers in this class. They have Quay Davis committed. I've said before, that's a commitment that USC is going to have to continue to work on to keep solidified. You have Michael Jackson, who's floating out there, who should be probably making a decision within the next couple weeks. I think USC looks pretty good there. In terms of the big fish, the highly rated guy that sort of rounds out the trio, Franklin was the guy that I think USC had the most confidence level with. And that is alarming because he doesn't even include them in his final four. It's one thing to maybe not commit to USC, but to not be in the final four is a bit of a surprise. So USC has to pivot. They have to find someone else. Maybe it's Deontay Thornton. Maybe there's another player out there like Malcolm Johnson that they offered from Virginia, who's a 10-3, 800 meters wide receiver. There are plenty of options nationally, and certainly wide receiver is not a position where USC's sweating at in terms of depth. I agree. In terms of Franklin, that's a bit of a shocker, and that's a bit of a concern from a read standpoint. You want your coaching staff to be able to read situations accurately so they know before you get into a situation where there's a top four or there's a final four that you need to pivot and go in another direction with the recruit. Our next question comes from Super Trojan 5, who asked some fun recruiting history questions. Uh-oh. What is your favorite recruiting commitment stories that have occurred during your career? It could be a surprise commitment or a shocking decommitment. Could you please explain for fans what happened to DeAnthony Thomas in 2011? How did he flip to Oregon in one day? And then he asked, rank these shocking announcements in order of shock for you and the school, parentheses USC. DeSean Jackson, Manti Te'o, DeAnthony Thomas, and Jalen Ramsey. So without getting too nostalgic and waxing poetic on shock commitments, I do remember Michael Morgan out of Dallas Skyline High School, same high school that Quay Davis plays at. He was a four-star, and he had put out, I believe, a top three or maybe even a top two just a week or so before he was going to announce, and it had Florida State and Texas A&M. So he went on television, and he announced for USC, and it shocked everybody. I got a call from Jeff Tarpley, who actually covers the Texas A&M site for 24/7. At the time, we were both at Rivals. Jeff calls me up and says, dude, Michael Morgan. And I say, yeah, what about Michael Morgan? He goes, he just committed to USC. And I said, what? He says, dude, I just watched on television. He committed to USC. I go, you're kidding me, right? Don't, you know, at this time of night, I got to scramble and write a commit story. He goes, dude, I'm telling you the truth. I swear to God, he committed to USC. It's shocking, but yeah, he committed to USC. So I'm scrambling. I can't remember how it happened, but somehow I got his brother on the phone. But that was one of the more out of left field shocking commitments. Ken Martin Jr. locking that one down in Texas, and USC getting a guy that ended up playing in the NFL, ended up playing a long time for the Seattle Seahawks, mostly in special teams, Michael Morgan. But that was one of the biggest shocks from that standpoint. I would say on the flip side, one of the biggest shocks, he wasn't committed to USC, but it was almost like a decommitment when Manti Te'o went to Notre Dame. USC thought they were getting Manti Te'o for sure. And then he called them as he was driving from his house down to Honolulu for the announcement. And he was crying in tears, and he called Pete Carroll and said, Coach, I'm going to go to Notre Dame. And Pete Carroll immediately wanted to get on the phone with his dad, and his dad refused to talk to him. And so that was a big shock. That was out of left field. DeSean Jackson was also out of left field. A lot of people assumed DeSean Jackson was going to go to USC. In terms of ranking those ones, I would say, yeah, Manti Te'o was number one. DeSean was probably number two. DeAnthony Thomas was up there as well. But DeAnthony Thomas was a strange kid. And I remember making this statement on the podcast way back then, and it still holds true today. Actions speak louder than words in recruiting. And DeAnthony Thomas rarely ended up going to USC on official visits or for games. He didn't show up on campus very much. And so he was committed to USC for a long time, but you just didn't see him at games. You just didn't see him at recruiting events. And that always kind of stood out to me. That always gave me a weird feeling about him. How that ended up playing out, that's probably a podcast in and of itself. He went up to Oregon for an official visit right before signing day, and boom, came down with a tracksuit and Nikes and said, I'm going to go to Oregon. And USC continued to try to get in his ear and try to flip him back, but it was really too little too late. So that was surprising as well. But I think definitely Manti Te'o was number one because he, you know, USC was rolling at that point, and I remember his official visit to Notre Dame, the student section, I think, threw snowballs at the team because they had lost to Navy that weekend. So you picture a Hawaiian kid there in the snow watching the fans throw snowballs at the football team as they come off the field because they just lost to Navy. Yeah, that was a shocker. Our next question comes from Pileberg, who asked, GM, of the current committed players or players we've targeted, who's the best fit at the star position? And who is the best fit at the B-backer position? At the start back position, I think Anthony Beavers Jr. is probably the best fit. 6'1", 195 pounds. I think he could probably play around 210, 215 and play that position. He's a really good open field tackler. You put him in the box and you put some weight on him. Zamirion Gordon out of Downey could also play that position, but I think he's more of a single high safety along with Kalen Bullock. I think both of those guys play in the deep third. At the B-backer position, I don't really see anybody committed right now that would play that position. I think Corey Foreman might make the most sense. Again, I've talked about the Jack linebacker and the B-backer position being a really good pass-rushing weak side defensive end that has the athletic ability to occasionally play in coverage. And I think Corey Foreman probably fits that bill better than anybody else on the target list right now. Pyberg also asked a metal question. Are you a big Metallica or Megadeth fan? If so, who do you prefer? I like both, but I prefer Metallica. The next question is, also, do you believe Dave Mustaine wrote most of Metallica's best hits, or is that Sour Grapes? I think that's definitely Sour Grapes. If you listen to The Four Horsemen, and then you listen to The Mechanics, which is Mustaine's version of The Four Horsemen, The Four Horsemen is definitely a better song. Mechanics is great because it's faster, and he plays the riff faster, but The Four Horsemen is clearly a better composed song. Moving down the thread, because I see we've covered a few of these topics already, Trojan Tito 66 asks, the new commit, Saia, looks very lean even though he's listed at 280 pounds. When he adds more muscle and weight, where could you see him playing? Left tackle or right tackle? Saia Mapakaitolo, who just committed to USC last week, 6'5", 280 pounds from Alamany High School, he plays left tackle in high school. And this was one of the things that came up in the debate when USC supposedly lost out on Jonah Miller. Jonah Miller plays guard in high school, and USC was looking at him more as a guard than an offensive tackle. So you're comparing sort of apples and oranges when USC is really looking to add another offensive tackle. And Mapakaitolo is one of those guys. He is playing left tackle in high school, and I think there's potential he could play left tackle in college. Certainly he could play right tackle, but from what you see from him on film and you see his length, and according to Casey Clausen, who coaches at Alamany, he is definitely 280 pounds, which is surprising because he looks closer to 250. So that tells you about his length and his frame. So I definitely think he's an offensive tackle. Whether he plays right or left will depend a lot on his footwork, his athleticism, and his balance. And certainly, he's a pretty raw prospect, so it's going to take some coaching to get him there. Punjabinator asked for a Nathaniel Wiggins update. Nothing new to report on Nathaniel Wiggins this week. He asked, how many cornerbacks are we going to take in this class? USC is expected to take 3 cornerbacks in this class. Plan A looks like Jalen Smith, Sierra Wright, and Nathaniel Wiggins. Then you get into Jameer Johnson, perhaps Jalen Davies. USC also just offered Pensacola, Florida 4-star cornerback Demarius McGahey. So that's another player that you have to look out for when it comes to cornerback recruiting. Our next question comes from OCSJ, Trojan fan. He asks, Showtime, G-Mart, what's up, man? Where's Ryan at? You should have him to do some vocals for your intro remix. I'll give you a question you can't butcher. Running backs, Diggs, D'Anthony from Texas, what's up with number 2, possibly number 3? Is there any surprises? Keep grinding. They finally free G-Mart. I love it. If USC is not able to make a move with Byron Cardwell, the 6'1", 195-pound running back out of San Diego, there's going to have to be some surprises. Logan Diggs, 5'11", 190 pounds, 3-star out of Louisiana, ranked the number 26 running back in the nation. And then D'Anthony Lewis, even farther down, ranked the number 44 running back in the nation out of Converse Judson High School in Texas. At face value, these are system-type running backs. These are type of running backs that you take between years where you've got a 4-star or a 5-star coming in. Again, I think USC needs more size to complement Brandon Campbell, who I think is a solid pickup, but I think they need another running back that's a good solid 6-foot that can put on 215, 220 pounds because of what you're losing with Stephen Carr and Vi Malapai. If you're taking a tailback that's as big or even smaller than Brandon Campbell, he better be a game breaker. Okay, 45 minutes in, and we've made it to the second page of the thread. Probably going to have to push through some of these questions a little faster maybe cut off some of these multi-question posts. The next question comes from Trojan Bamaborn, who asks, saying we get JT Tuimoloau, Corey Foreman, Aaron Armitage, and the long shot, Mason Smith, and keep the current D-line commits, is there a better D-line class SC has brought in that you've seen? That would probably be an old-timer. It would definitely compete with the 2017 class, which brought in Jay Tufele, Marlon Tuipulotu, Brandon Peely, Hunter Echols, and Jacob Litzenstein. Our next question is from David Law, who asks, two queries for you, GM. First, who from the past does Ethan Calvert remind you of? And are we going to get him? Second, you got to bet the farm one way or the other on Corey Foreman. You betting he ends up a Trojan or not? David, I'm sorry. I'm not a betting man. Certainly not when it comes to the whims of a 17-year-old. As for Ethan Calvert, you know, I would go with maybe an A.J. Hawk, who went to Ohio State and played in the NFL for a number of years. He may still be playing in the NFL. I'm not 100% sure. But I think his profile comparison is with Brian Cushing. My issue with that is Brian Cushing returned kicks in high school. He played safety. And Calvert played safety too, but Cushing played a lot of safety. He played running back. He was used all over the field for Bergen Catholic coming out of high school. So I think athletically, he was that much more versatile. But A.J. Hawk, I think, is a pretty decent comparison. Violent at the point of attack, athletic, plays well off the edge, but probably plays in the middle at the higher levels. So I'm going to go with A.J. Hawk. Trojan Bamaborn asks another question, and we're going to try to keep this one question per poster moving forward. But he comes in with the question, another question for GM, how do you see the staff approach to kids wanting to commit? Are they taking first come, first serve, or giving some kids the runaround, waiting for other ones they like? I think most of it is first come, first serve. I think a good example of that is Lake McCree, the tight end out of Austin, Texas, and USC recruiting Terrence Ferguson, the tight end out of Littleton, Colorado. And maybe they're not too far apart from each other on the board, but Ferguson for a while seemed like the guy for USC. But McCree wants to commit. Sounds like he's going to make a decision within the next 2 weeks. And so if he commits first, I think USC takes him. Big Nick 21 USC comes in with a, hello Trojan fans and G-Mart. Do you think the top recruits want to leave LA like the past two cycles? Or has the new staff taken back LA? Fight on. I think the new defensive staff certainly has done a tremendous job helping to lock down local players. But, if USC goes out and lays an egg next season, and let's say they only win 7 games, they're going to lose some guys. It's going to be a battle. They're going to recruit better than they would normally in that type of year. But there's a whole lot of questions that rise from a bad season. And certainly the biggest question will be the future of Clay Helton and what USC does if they decide to fire him, because that will change everything and have a huge impact on recruiting. The next question comes from Trojan for Life, who asks, right now we have two particular recruitments going for two-way linemen, Josh Simmons and T.S. Sevilla. Simmons is listed as an offensive lineman and being recruited as an offensive lineman by USC, but has explicitly said multiple times that he wants to play defense. Now, I'll interject here. He has said he prefers to play defensive line, but will play wherever his coaches want him to play. So Trojan for Life has three questions. One, how do we make sense of all the 24/7 crystal ball picks to USC when we're not recruiting him at the position that he wants to play? Two, is USC recruiting him as a guard or tackle? And three, are there any other schools trying to make headway by recruiting him to play defense? I'd imagine every school recruiting him is going to tell him he can have a shot at playing defense. The crystal ball picks are because USC is doing a great job recruiting him, and they lead right now. I think USC is recruiting him to play guard, but there is potential he could play offensive tackle. And listen, USC is doing something unique. They're going to have Elijah Vera Tucker, who has played guard the last 2 years, play left tackle this season. So if you're normally an interior player, you see a potential that you could actually play offensive tackle in college, even if you come in as an offensive guard. Trojan for Life goes on to ask, why USC is recruiting T.S. Sevilla as a defensive lineman when he is rated as an offensive lineman? I can't give you the word-for-word scouting report from Vic Saoto, but they made that evaluation early in the recruiting process. And as we've already said, with defensive linemen like Aaron Armitage and Colin Mobley now seriously looking at USC, Mobley already committed, you now have to sort of rearrange and maybe reorganize your defensive line recruiting board. So potentially maybe Tia Sevilla gets pushed to the offensive side of the ball. Maybe they start recruiting him as an offensive lineman. We don't know yet. Priester comes in with our next question and asks, it seems pretty obvious McCutchen is plan B. Does he have a committable offer? Speaking of Bishop Amott three-star cornerback Dyson McCutchen, right now, no. I don't believe he has a committable offer. I think McCutchen is probably more even of a plan C at this point for USC. He goes on to ask, Jalen Smith and Jalen Davies seem to be similar talents. Do you see USC taking both players, especially with other cornerback types in the fold? We've covered this, but Jalen Smith is definitely, I think, at the top tier. Jalen Davies may be sort of a plan B right now. And then you move into Dyson McCutchen and maybe some of those other players. It's a good year for defensive backs in Southern California. So I don't want to make it sound like even a plan B or plan C, you're necessarily not getting a good player. You could still be getting a very good player. But I think right now USC wants to lock down Jalen Smith, Sierra Wright, and then potentially go out of state and get a taller corner like Nathaniel Wiggins. His final question is about Thomas Cole, the 6'7", 255-pound three-star offensive lineman from San Luis Obispo, and basically asking why USC has not offered him yet. I don't have an answer for that question. USC is not recruiting him. He's just not on the radar for USC right now. Silent Commit asks the next question, are there any silent commits? I think Silent Commit should ask that question every week. If so, can you guys give us a hint at the position? I actually dropped a hint about this during the last Recruiting Rant podcast, so you might want to go back to last week's podcast and re-listen to it. It's a bad question. It's bad. You got to walk backwards on that one. Can't answer a question like that, black or white. Our next question comes from Big EBC, who asks, do any of our commits so far plan to be early entries in January? Several of them do. Jake Garcia plans on it. Ma'a Yonte Ote plans on it. I know Brandon Campbell has talked about it. Mason Murphy. But it's a little early in the year, especially considering a lot of these kids are not in their normal classes or taking online classes. That might actually benefit them. They might be able to cram more courses into online than they would normally. So we'll see how that shakes out. But there's a few kids that are planning to enroll early, and certainly a majority of them are planning to sign early in December. Our next question comes from SC Greg. He asks, I'm very skeptical about Jake Garcia's commitment as he has gone silent. What happens if he doesn't commit and Miller Moss doesn't reclassify? Hypothetically, if Jake Garcia was to decommit from USC, I think USC would circle the wagons, put the full court press on Miller Moss, and get him committed. Now, Miller Moss could commit to USC anyways, which might push out Jake Garcia. But if you're asking if Jake Garcia and Miller Moss both end up elsewhere, what does USC do? My rapid fire answer to that question is USC would be SOL. Vegas guy Paul asked, short and sweet this week, Gerard. Do we sign any junior college players this class? Thanks, Paul in Vegas. I kind of touched on that already. I don't think so. I think for a school like USC, academically, it makes more sense for them to go in the transfer portal than to try to recruit a junior college player. Moving down the thread some, Green Trojan asked, is Ma'e Nyote Ote still a take? To my knowledge, he is still a take and still committed to USC. The next question is from BU4USC, who asked, question on the incoming freshman O-liners. Among the six, which 2 to 3 will contribute the earliest? I'm going to say Jonah Monheim, the 6'5", 285-pound offensive guard from Moore Park, and Cortland Ford, the 6'6", 310-pound offensive tackle from Cedar Hill. I do like Casey Collier out of Mont Belvieu, Texas, 6'7", 300-pound three-star, but I think he's a little younger and just going to take a little more time to get used to the speed of the game. And really, I think it's just going to take a little more time from a strength standpoint for him to be able to contribute. But I think ultimately, he shows a lot of promise on film. And our final question from East Oakland Slim, who asks, why so many out-of-state recruits? Shouldn't we be locking down SoCal? If we don't recruit them, we will have to play against them. Example, we took Kenny Bigelow, but not Kenny Clark. That's a good question, and it's something that we've touched on already in this podcast. But I think it's a combination of two things. I think one, USC has a lot of coaches with ties to Texas. And USC has kind of recruited Texas as if they're trying to reinvent themselves with a recruiting base that hasn't seen their decline over the past few years. They're recruiting more on the tradition of USC and the name of USC, but not necessarily the recent product that they put on the field. On the flip side, kids in Southern California and California in general hear a lot more negative recruiting narratives than kids in Texas will. Because the kids in Texas are getting recruited by LSU, they're being recruited by the Texas schools, they're being recruited by Oklahoma. Those schools are not worried about USC. The schools on the West Coast are. So you're going to hear a lot more from the Oregon staff and the Washington staff and the Cal staff, UCLA staff, etc., etc., how the trajectory of the USC football program isn't what it was. And that in itself makes it harder to recruit Southern California. That's going to be it for the Recruiting Rant podcast this week. Thank you to all the Peristyle members who asked questions. And be sure to stay tuned to USCFootball.com for unparalleled coverage in recruiting and athletics.